Hello, and welcome to the Carry On Bags Only podcast. I'm your host, Kelsey. I'm super excited for today's episode as it features a guest I met during one of my outdoor adventures in the Scottish Highlands. Louise is a weekend adventurer who regularly falls off the grid to discover the wild and untouched remote corners of the world. She's passionate about supporting others to get into the wild, pushing their boundaries with a focus on the conservation of nature while creating a sustainable future for all. Starting out doing tough mudders and tough Vikings, she discovered adventure racing as a way through a physical challenge to explore the world. She has completed races in the US, Morocco, and the UK, with her next adventure set to take place in Kyrgyzstan in 2021 and Namibia in 2022. Louise is also the co-founder of City Camping, which we will hear more about later in the episode. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. So Louise, welcome to the Carry On Bags Only podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today from the UK.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm super excited to have you on the show, and I absolutely love that we both share a passion for outdoor adventures. So for those that don't know, I met Louise back in 2018 on one of my first solo adventures in Scotland. I had signed up for what was called an IGO adventure race, and it was 51 kilometers of running, hiking, and canoeing in the Scottish Highlands, where I literally knew no one. And at the time, it was by far one of the toughest challenges I had committed to. Before that, the longest distance I had ever completed was a half marathon. So I went into this thinking that I was pretty extreme. And then I meet Louise, who has literally crushed multiple adventure races around the world, including the US and Morocco. So can you tell me a little bit more about how all this came to be? How many adventure races have you completed, and what were the disciplines or distances involved?
I think it all started with, actually, weirdly, moving to London from Stockholm in 2013. And I had just got really into my fitness. And when I moved from Stockholm to London, I didn't want to lose it. So I was out walking in Stockholm one kind of late summer's day, and I saw these group of people coming, running through basically fire and then throwing themselves into water, swimming about 400 meters and then launching themselves up like these barriers. And that looked to me really, really fun. All of what I'm about to say is type 2 fun. It's not particularly fun when you do it, but you look back and you're like, this was the best thing I ever did. And that was called a tough Viking. So I was like, great, I'm signing up for next year to have something to really keep me on my fitness track once I'm in London, to have something to train for rather than just going to the gym. And kind of that was the start of it, because I started with this tough Viking year one, and then over the kind of 2-3 next years I started doing tough mudders in England, and I think the most I did was probably one tough Viking and three tough mudders within 1 year. And then I had a friend who had actually also done the first IGO adventures in Norway, and he invited me along for the screening of the movie of the IGO adventures, and I came along and I saw this race. And I've always loved to travel, and I always wanted to go to Morocco. And IGO was putting on IGO Morocco later the following year, the inaugural one, which was back in 2018. I saw this as my opportunity to see Morocco, but also have something that really challenged me in a physical way. And as you had Scotland, that was my Morocco. I basically launched myself into this adventure. I had a personal trainer who helped me train for it. And the disciplines in that one was, day one was a mountain bike, and then it was orientation and kayaking, and then it was uphill cycling, and then the last day you basically, it was called an Atlas scramble, but it was basically running 20 kilometers straight up a mountain, because the distance was between Marrakesh and the Atlas mountains. So first through the desert and then straight up the mountains. That was kind of my first adventure, because in a sense, being Swedish, you are quite a lot in the outdoors when you're little and so on and so forth. And we'd gone kayaking or canoeing with my parents, but we hadn't really kind of gone adventure traveling in that sense. So for me, I think you said the same, Kelsey, that it is a very going with a company like that really helps you get out in nature. And as you, I didn't know anyone either. So for me, it was like the really first step of challenging myself, but also kind of you get the opportunity to learn on the job in that sense, because I'd never done long distance bracing, and especially not in the desert, you know. So it's learning about how to use your kit, and then learning about, you know, how to eat and how to drink and so on and so forth, and like when to drink and what to drink. And this was all quite new for me, but I completely got the bug, and it was quite tough. I'm not going to lie. I strictly remember, actually, preparing for this podcast, I remember coming up the last 2K we got to Atlas Mountains, and you got to the top, and it's a weird thing because it's a skiing resort in the middle of the Atlas Mountains, and you don't really connect going skiing with Morocco. And you get up, and then you race down, and we came over the plain, and I saw camp in the distance, and I was so exhausted, and I hadn't drank properly, and I started crying. And this is a little bit what I meant at the start with the type 2 fun, because at that point, it's not fun, but you keep pushing yourself. And I think that's what really helped me catch the bug so incredibly, that you just blow the barriers that you think you had, and you just push through. Yeah. That was kind of the first one. And then, like you, I did the Scotland one, which I thought was absolutely amazing. I loved the Highlands. And then I continued on and did Montana the next year. And Montana is, what I find really fascinating is that you get through these landscapes. When you were in Morocco, it's very arid, the desert, and then you come through the mountains, which are absolutely incredible, bursting with life. And then you have Montana, which is very, very different, which is, you know, quite, you're out in Glacier National Park, you're quite remote. And you start with a 2.4K swim, then directly after a 12K run. That's your day one. Day two is a 65K bike ride up a mountain and then down a mountain. The third day is a 35K kayak, and the last day is a marathon. Kind of on top of all this, you then also have to learn to deal with local wildlife, such as bears.
Yes.
So we were taught how to protect ourselves with bear spray. Luckily, we didn't see anyone. But I think, you know, what I like about this is, like, you don't only have the physical challenge. And I'm sure we're going to talk about all the camaraderie and the bonds that you form with people, etc. But it's also, you are so far outside your comfort zone in every sense of the word, that you launch yourself into the morning. And as I said, you know, you need to kind of learn on the job with all of the preparation and, you know, how to eat and so on and so forth. But you also have, when you come in to camp, it's not like you're coming into a 5-star hotel and there's a shower. You know, I remember cycling down, and the cycling, oh my God, the views that we saw up from that mountain was just incredible. They call Montana Big Sky Country, and there's just absolutely nothing there but wild nature, and it blows my mind. And I think that's also one of the reasons why I really got into adventure racing, because you just get the opportunity to see these beautiful vistas whilst you're pushing yourself. And as I said, when we were then cycling into camp, it's not like you jump in a hot shower. Basically, what was there was a glacial river. So you kind of strip off your kit, and it was not particularly warm, and you jump in the river and you wash yourself off. So you're kind of stripped back to, like, you know, the essence of what you need. And I find that such a seductive combination of being physically challenging, mentally challenging, but you're also quite vulnerable, because you're so at the mercy of nature, and which I absolutely love, because you really feel like you're there at their invitation. That's how that came about. And that's why I just also kept having the bug, which just now brings me to more and more far-flung places, which I really love. I'm gutted that I was supposed to go to Kyrgyzstan in August, but for some unfathomable reason. None of us are traveling at the moment, so I'm hoping that's going to happen in August this year. But I think also, to go back to what I kind of briefly mentioned, when you are doing these adventures, and as you said, we met there and we were doing it completely by ourselves, you know. But what I found quite funny with chatting with the people who organize Zygo is that they see a lot of women coming to them, individual women, because I think there's something about guys maybe do this more together, but not a lot of females, you know, says, okay, should we go, you know, run 50K on a Saturday and then camp in nature. Yeah. It's kind of hard to find that group of women. But I think that's the second thing. What I really love about these things is that you find people who does find this type 2 fun equally seductive and equally fun. And that I love nothing more than after a day you come in, you know, you swam in the little lake or river, whatever, what was there. And then you sit around the campfire and everyone's chatting. And because everyone's so stripped back to their kind of bare essentials, everyone's really vulnerable and open, and you get to know people very, very quickly, quite intimately, because you're not, you know, you're not in London. There's not a barrier to uphold. And you just, when you're spending 8 hours running through the desert, after a while, you know, you can only talk so much about the weather in that sense.
Yeah.
You kind of get down to the big questions, which is also such a lovely aspect to it, because I know certainly with you and I, you don't, when you are running up that mountain in Scotland and everyone is fighting and you just support each other, you cheer each other on. You know, I remember when all of us ran over the finish line at the end and everyone's clapping and they're playing Chariots of Fire. And it's just such an incredibly, like, feeling of camaraderie and support. And you don't, and I think that's one of the things that really also, you know, invites me to keep coming back, because there is a camaraderie and there is a community spirit that you don't, sounds so silly, but you don't have to be afraid to go on your own. Everyone is so holding out an open hand and really inviting you into that community, which I find so lovely.
No, I couldn't agree more with that. And I think for me too, it was one of the scariest things for me to go into something where I didn't know anybody, but just like you said, everybody is there with open arms and supporting you. And I kind of expected that I was going to be going through a lot of this on my own, and you're not. You end up finding somebody and you talk to them and you push each other through, and it's just such an incredible feeling. And especially when you're not feeling like, you know, you hit those moments where it's really tough and you just don't think you can get through, and they're there to support you and to help you and motivate you. And just that sense of empowerment that you feel when you finish something like that, especially going into it, if you're a little unsure if you can even do something. And I think that's the biggest thing that I want to say to people is that for me personally, I had gone into this with not a ton of training. And I was like, you know, it's make or break. I'm either going to love it or I'm going to hate it, but there's only one way to find out. And to your point, I went into it and I absolutely loved it. And it's like, you get this bug and you just keep going and you just get addicted to it and you just want to keep doing it.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I think that's such an important point, because when you're doing it, not like, especially if you're doing longer races, or actually it doesn't matter. It can be, you know, it can be a 10K race. It can be a 50K race. It doesn't matter. You will at some point hit a wall when it's just not fun. And I think that's also when you get to know yourself, when you discover that grit inside you, and that where you really dig deep, where you really go through. Because I remember it's quite funny, actually. I have a video of myself when I was in Morocco, where I'm about, I think it was about 3 or 4K out from camp, but it was really at the kind of final ascent going up. And I'm going in the video and I'm really talking to myself. I'm like, I am not giving up. My legs are about to give out, but I am not giving up, because I have this thing that when I get too tired, I can't eat. And then, you know, your energy levels drop. So it's just that vicious circle. And I was really past and I really had to eat something. But all I had was like one of those energy bars, and they just become too big to chew, basically. And I was really, yeah. I was really digging deep in myself. And I was, all I wanted was just to get up to that top of the hill where I could see the flag. And you're just digging deep. And I think that also really, because when I got back from Morocco, I signed up for my first London Marathon, because I was a little bit, marathon people for me have always been the kind of epitome of athletes, basically. I've always looked at people who run marathon as like the most incredible sports people on earth, because I just couldn't wrap my head around the fact that somebody would voluntarily put themselves through that. And when I came back from Morocco, I was like, you know what, if I can, you know, get myself from Marrakesh to the Atlas Mountains by bike and foot, I am sure that I will, you know, it doesn't, I don't have to run all the time, but it, walking, crawling, running, I will finish that London Marathon. And I think that really helped, because a marathon is not fun. It is at times. It was, I danced yeah. through Canary Wharf because there was a big salsa band, and that was the fun part. But when your London Marathon is predominantly fun, because there's just so many people and everyone's cheering you on, and you feel like you're a Beyonce, you know, like everyone's shouting your name, and it's like, wow. But running a marathon in Montana after 3 days of really intense physical challenges, and then on your final day you run a marathon to get back from the national park into Whitefish, which is this little town in Montana, and you are running by yourself, that is really when you're digging deep. And I think that's that mental toughness that you get from doing these things, I think also really helps you in everyday life, because you just learn how to dig deep. You learn how to, when you face a really tough challenge, you learn how to kind of, you know, how you handle yourself in those kind of situations. And as we're going to talk about city camping later, but as a friend of mine, George Bullard, who's one of the founders of IGO, he says, which I think is very good, he's like, fear is good, but panic kills. And I think it's really good to, when you are in situations where something happens, it's keeping a cool head on your shoulders really helps.
And I really like that you say that about the correlation to everyday life, because the biggest thing that I keep hearing over and over is the uncomfortable becomes comfortable. And the more you put yourself into those situations, the more you start to learn about yourself and other people. And after that, the things that you find scary aren't as scary anymore. And I think adventure racing, everyone at some point in their lifetime should try it. The last adventure race I did was in Ireland, and it was through a company called Quest Adventures. And they had put on, it's kind of various distances. What gave me the confidence to do that was doing the IGO. And like you said, it's like, okay, if I can do this, yeah. I can do, you know, anything, it feels like. And so I signed up for this, and it was, the disciplines were running, biking, hiking, and kayaking. And I basically flew over, which was the Canadian Thanksgiving, because I had used up all of my holiday time throughout the year. I had 2 days left, and I was like, I'm going to do this, because I had originally wanted to do the IGO adventure in Ireland that was happening earlier that year, but it had gotten canceled, and we ended up doing the other Talisker yes. whiskey adventure through IGO, which in my opinion yeah. was honestly so incredible. And so after I did that, I signed up for this trip in Ireland with a friend that I had met again while traveling through another friend, and found out he was super into adventure races. And he's like, you should honestly come back and do this. And I was so excited, because again, you know, I find it hard to find people within my immediate friend group that like to do these kind of things. So when he put the invitation out there, I was like, I'm in, I will do this. So I remember getting there. I didn't give myself a lot of time. I think I landed on a Thursday, or I left on a Thursday, arrived Friday, And then they picked me up in Dublin. We drove down to Kerry. We had to get everything set up. And then the adventure race was essentially the next day.
I was just
and
going
so
to
I'm
say.
Jet lagged. We also, yeah, like it, I don't recommend it. I always would say give yourself some time to, you know, have a buffer to get, you know, acclimatized to wherever you are. But I got there and then I made the mistake. I think you just get like so excited. You're like, yes, I'm in another country and I want to have fun. So we went and had a couple pints of Guinness the night before, which was a bad idea. I should not have done that. And just in general, and I don't know if you're like this, but I usually get really bad anxiety before a race. I always have this anxiety that I'm going to miss the race, or, you know, I'll accidentally sleep in or forget something. And so I always have this really bad anxiety. And of course, this race, that happens to me to the point that I misplaced my number for my bike and everything. And I realized this as we are heading to the race start line, and I'm panicking, thinking, oh my gosh, like I'm going to slow everyone down. So I had to quickly run over and talk to some of the people putting on the race. And luckily they were able to just give me kind of a temporary number just to get me going. And so I'm coming into this race already so flustered. I'm not feeling great. I'm feeling a little bit dehydrated from the night before. I'm jet lagged. So I'm not feeling great. And you kicked off the first part with biking. So I'm on the bike. We're coming out of the town and we hit a steep incline pretty quickly into the first couple of kilometers. And it hits me. And I, to your, it's same when you kind of talked about how, you know, you started to cry and you're just like, oh my gosh, that was me. Like I'm going up this mountain and finally I was like, I need to pull off to the side of the road. So I pull off and you just start thinking of everything. Like, you know, I shouldn't have drank those pints of beer the night before. I should have better trained for this. And, you know, I was in that moment, like, I'm going to have to turn back around. And, you know, what am I going to tell my friends when they come across the finish line and see me there? And you kind of start going through all of the motions. And I thought, no, and I had to kind of get myself sorted. And luckily, my friend had given me a pack of electrolytes that I ended up putting into some of my water. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to drink this and see how I feel. And I just remember like standing, watching everybody, you know, biking past me. So I'm pretty sure at this point, I'm dead last. I just remember looking around and seeing these neon colored lambs running around. And I'm thinking, am I hallucinating right now? Like, is this really happening? And you just look and you're just in such awe, because I remember thinking like, you know, I could be at home in the office right now, but instead here I'm in this beautiful, picturesque place in the world. And I thought, I have to finish this. I have to commit to it. And I thought, you know what? It might not be your best time, but just finish it. And so I took the electrolytes, I started to feel a lot better, and I kept going. And the other thing about this race was that if you get a flat tire, nobody is allowed to help you. Like, you have to be self-sufficient to fix a flat. As I'm going into this race, I'm like flying by people who have pop tires and they're on the side of the road trying to fix it, and I'm just panicking, thinking, please, please just get me through without having a pop tire. And so I luckily made it through, got through to the end and finished it. And it was honestly the most rewarding feeling crossing that finish line, knowing how crappy I was feeling, knowing everything that I had just overcome going into that race. And, you know, at the time, like you said, you're in it and you're kind of like, oh gosh, like, you know, was this a smart idea? And then after, it's like, sign me up, like, but I'm ready to go for my next one.
Yeah, but I think it's crazy. I agree. And I think it's that joined feeling of that you overcame yourself. Like, you know, you literally had, and it's a fantastic concept of how you speak to yourself. Because I think I, especially when I do long distance things, and the worst mistake I ever did when I started out doing tough Vikings and tough mudders is to think I've only done, you know, 1 mile, 1 kilometer. I now have 19 to go or whatever. And I think that was my biggest mental shift when I started thinking, oh my God, I have already done a mile, whatever. And I think that is really, it just teaches you how you talk to yourself and how you almost like build that mental resilience to overcome things, because it was when I ran the first London Marathon, I was going to run it by myself, but two girls, we were running for the same charity. We teamed up about literally 30 minutes before we were supposed to go. And it was lovely, because then by every mile, we celebrated every mile. So because at the London Marathon, they have got these like big markers for every mile, which can be, if you have the mentality that, oh my God, I've only done 2 miles or whatever, it can be pretty daunting, because you know you have another couple of miles to go. But we did like a pirouette or a high five or did a squat jump or had a water fight or whatever. And it was just this really fun, because it really is like, oh my God, I've already done that. Because as you say, you will hit a wall. I did that when I did the race in Montana, because that starts with a 2.4K swim across a lake. And my biggest fear is black water. You know, when you look into water and you can't see anything because it's just black. And I was petrified for that swim. And it was the first day. And you kind of start on the side of the lake and you swim straight into the lake. And then you kind of turn and you go for this little house. And you basically see it as just a little white hut in the very distance. And then when you come out of the water, you realize it's actually a quite large mansion. And I was swimming across, and I was very lucky. I had a friend with me who he didn't swim, but because he was paddleboarding next to me. And at one point during that water, I looked down and I really panicked, because I think it was like a leftover of seeing Jaws as little or something. Kind of, and I had exactly the same feeling. I'm like, I'm in a lake in the US. How did I end up here? I really hate black water, and you're so far from shore that you're just, you know, there's, you can't really go anywhere, because your only option is to keep swimming. And but it's just that overcoming that mental thing of like, either I panic and I will probably then start sinking at some point, or I just keep going, really, like, just keep going, keep swimming, and just get there. But it is fantastic on how, what you overcome and what you then bring with you into other parts of your life, which I think is a great thing. And I think also, as you said, you meet, and that is such a good point, because you meet such incredible people when you do this. I've some of my now closest friends I have met on IGOs and in other places, because you just end up, as we said, like, you know, after a couple of hours, you have to stop talking about the weather, and you have to kind of like quite quickly talk about personal things, and not have to, but you do, because you're all in the same situation. You're quite tired, you're physically exhausted, you are quite vulnerable. So you, most people I've spoken to about this say that you do tend to open up a lot more, because you're also quite far removed from your everyday life, and you find yourself in, you know, in beautiful nature, and it's very calming and very, very good for you.
And I just remember when we did the Talisker Whiskey Challenge, I think it was out in the countryside of Devon. And just when you cross the finish line, they had the bar set up and the music set up, and it's just, everyone comes together and it's like a big party, and everyone's just celebrating the fact that they just overcame this challenge. And it was just so much fun. And I remember, you know, one of the nights just going from the tent out to where the outhouse was and just staring and thinking, you know, this is incredible. Like, you're getting up in the middle of the night, but it's like the stars are out, and you just have that moment of, wow, like, I'm out in this beautiful area of the world that I wouldn't normally be in. And I had a lot of moments that I, you know, was pinching myself thinking, you know, you work hard and you go to work to be able to have moments like this, and you celebrate that, and being able to do that with other people is just so incredible. And that's probably one of the biggest reasons I love doing these races, is for the camaraderie and for meeting like-minded individuals and building those bonds with people otherwise.
I completely agree. And I also think what I almost find with adventure racing is that when I started doing it, a lot of people ask, like, how on earth why do you find that fun and what is it? But I'm always yeah. And you know, you just want to say to them, like, just try it just once, you'll love it. It doesn't have to be yes. you know, like, as you say, like the extreme ones. You can start with something like the Devon one. It's a quite lovely one, because, you know, especially if you live in England, because it's quite close, it's the nature, you know, and then it's just gorgeous nature. But then, and I think sometimes I almost, it's mm-hmm. a little bit like wild swimming. You almost don't want to call it adventure racing, because people get a little bit scared of what's in the name. You know, that you're like, it's almost like wild swimming. Like, it's not really like that wild. You basically, you see, you know, body of water and you jump in it. It's not, you know, you take, and with adventure racing, you go from point A to point B and you look at beautiful nature whilst doing so. And I think sometimes it's almost, and I think that word adventure racing can sometimes have a slightly deterrent effect on people. And I think helping people, as you're doing now, and that's why I love this podcast and this podcast idea, because I think if you just, you know, when we say what we do and it's like, oh, it's this distances, it's these disciplines, it comes across as quite a lot. But when you break it down and you're like, yes, of course you have to train, because otherwise it's not also fun if you're about to die or like 100 meters in. It's not so out there that it's inaccessible for people. It's a little bit like what I said, but I'm the firm believer in that everyone can do a marathon. And it doesn't have to be running. We don't have to be Paula yes. Radcliffe. If you walk, crawl, run, doesn't matter. But I feel like it's a little bit the same with adventure racing. But because it's about a little bit that aura of like mystery, and it's a bit cool, and it's a bit like, yes, we take our gear and then we run across the desert and basically, and yeah. And I think that's the kind of barriers that you want to help breaking down. And that's also why I really liked, you know, going with companies, for instance, like GAIGO, because it allows you to focus on what you're there to do, which for me, for instance, was overcoming that physical challenge and doing the physical challenge. But you then don't also have to, you know, do all the racing of the camp and like catching and creating your own food. And I think that's a quite
100%.
If I would say to anyone who's wanting to do this and take your first step into adventure racing, find a company that you feel comfortable with, where you and understand what you want to achieve with it. So like, if your goal is, I want to do a really physical challenge in gorgeous nature, but maybe in the evening I want to come back to a hotel, great, then find a company that will allow for you to do that. I think it's really important that people do these races in a way that they feel comfortable with.
I agree with that. And I think too, you had mentioned a little bit earlier about the kit. And one thing that I really wanted to put out there for people to know too, is that I went into this knowing nothing. Like, I remember signing up and I was so grateful that GAIGO had given us that kit list of, hey, here's some things that you should think about packing. Because I wouldn't even know where to start.
Toe float really got to me.
When you're swimming
over long distances, and it's basically a mini float, so you have a band around your waist and it's a little float. Wow. And it also helps, especially when you're swimming over a lake like we did in Montana, where you have boats and jet skis and things, so that it helps you to be visible. But it's kind of serves the dual purpose of being afloat. So if you get tired, you can hold on to it almost like a life buoy. But it also helps you to be visible for other people on the lake or when you're swimming on open water. But I think there were so many things that when I put it into Google, I'm like, okay, we're learning.
No, I was the same way. And I remember just printing off the kit list and walking into like a local outdoor store and just handing a list to the guy and being like, I need all of this stuff. And he just looking at me like, what is this for? And the cool thing was about it was I was buying stuff in stages, because it is quite expensive to buy a lot of the kit. So I would kind of go and just start to buy, you know, stockpile and buy stuff as I went. And so I started actually becoming friends with the guy at the store and telling him about this adventure. And The fun thing about it is just seeing the way that people light up when you talk about it and just seeing them go, wow, like you're, so let me get this straight. You're flying across the world to go on an adventure where you know no one and you've never done this before and you're having me buy your kit. I'm like, yep, that's exactly what I'm doing. And just to even talk to the salespeople and them kind of talking to me about their own personal stories of adventure. And when I'd come into the store, it was like, oh, hey, like, you know, and you'd start to build these bonds with people and almost encourage people to, it was kind of like that ripple effect of inspiring other people to do it and being inspired by others. And it's just such a fun thing to be a part of. But it's funny that you're talking about, you know, things on the list that you didn't know when I remember looking at the IGO itinerary, because I feel like our vocab between the UK and Canada is so different. I remember looking at it and wondering, like, what is a bacon butty? Like, what is this? I remember Googling it and being like, so let me get this straight. It's just a piece of bacon in a sandwich.
And that butty is the best after you've done that Scotland race, especially. I mean, we were lucky because we had such great weather, but I came back and I did the same Scotland race, I think a year later, and it was absolutely, it was raining for 3 days straight, apart from maybe 2 hours on Saturday afternoon. And I remember that bacon butty and that cup of tea when we came over the finish line. I don't think I've had anything that's tasted that good.
True. I remember finishing the IGO adventure for Scotland and I was heading over to meet friends in Edinburgh, and I took the train over and got off the train and looked kind of at the map of where my Airbnb was from the train station, and I thought, right, okay, there's just, I gotta go up these stairs. So I turn the corner and see these stairs, and you were so sore after those adventure races. And I remember thinking, I don't think I can get up this. So I was like, okay, I got this. So I took it in stages. And I remember I got midway up this long staircase and I turned to the right and saw this piece of shop.
It's a sign.
I thought, yes. And I'm sure it was a dive, but at the time I was just like, this is the best thing ever.
I completely agree, because in Morocco, we ate freeze-dried food. Which for anyone who doesn't know what it is, it's basically compressed food parts in a bag, and you pour in hot water and you leave it for 2 to 3 minutes, and then it creates something which resembles some kind of nutrients. And it's basically, they all taste the same. It doesn't matter if it says spaghetti bolognese or, you know, fish and chips on the tip. It keeps you warm, but it's not great. And I remember we came back to the hotel in Morocco, and the last evening in Morocco was incredible. We were camping high up in the mountains and they'd done this feast, which was brilliant. It was just that when you've done 4 days of adventure racing and you've eaten freeze-dried food, your tummy is so small that you can't really eat that much. But I then remember we came down to the hotel, two of the guys, very tall guys, 6'4" guys. I think they had burgers for starters, pizza for main, and I think like a rib or something for pudding. It was just mad. It was basically like watching an all you can eat buffet between the two of them. I'm very much looking forward to doing one again, I have to say. You basically learn on the job. As you said, in the first one, when you do your first one, you come in with your kit list and you have absolutely no idea. And it's also very basic things. Like, you know, Scotland is such a great example, because during those 51Ks, so basically you start by running down to the lake, and then you kayak over the lake, and then you run up a mountain and then down a mountain, and you kayak back and then run back to camp. But during those 51Ks, you can basically encounter all different types of weathers. It can be bright sunshine, it can rain. We had snow at the top of one of those, and we had hail. So that's also what you learn on kind of like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to be out for X amount of hours. What do I need to bring with me? Do I need, you know, the full kind of rain kit, or am I fine with just a jumper? And I find that also so much fun, that you really learn from every time. And you just from the first one where you are complete novice to like right now where you kind of, I wouldn't say I'm completely comfortable, but at least I know if I'm doing a discipline a day, I know what to wear, I know what to bring, I know when to eat during the time, because that was really, I think, when I came to that plane on my first one in Morocco, why I was so tired and had nosebleed and was crying was because I just wasn't experienced and I didn't know that, for instance, you should eat something every hour, drink a lot, electrolytes is your best friend. It's things like that which also makes it so fun that you learn and you feel more comfortable. And I think in that sense, just feeling more comfortable around what you're doing also, for instance, allows you to appreciate the nature and the landscape around you, because when you have to focus less on yourself and basically just functioning through the discipline, you then can allow that to take a step back and just, you know, as you said, have that moment with the stars, or probably not during the day, but you know, just look at nature, which is amazing.
And this totally is a perfect segue for us to talk about city camping.
I have a good friend called George Bullard, and George is a professional explorer, and he and I are both extraordinarily passionate about what we call rewilding humans and getting people, more people out into nature. And I think it just goes hand in hand with, you know, where we are with the green movement and living sustainability, changing our linear economy into a circular economy. But we also know that so many people, especially in London, has only grown up in London. They have not been out in nature and they have not ever, you know, sat under the stars and experienced that. So, but we also know on the flip side that when someone says, and you and I can so relate to this, it's like, let's go camping, it kind of conjures up this image of let's go to remote Scottish Highlands, or, you know, let's go to Montana. That of course comes that it's being quite expensive. So it's kind of like a lot of barriers for someone who's never been out to nature, possibly don't have the same access to it as we had, and maybe also just never had anything that actually push them to go out into nature or, you know, awaken that interest. So what George and I really aim to do is that, and that's why we also called it city camping, is to have pop-up campsites in green spaces in the city to really prove to people that you don't have to go to the Scottish Highlands, although that's beautiful, but you can really experience nature on your doorstep. And by doing so, we then really want to show people that they can start caring for nature. And then that goes hand in hand then with how do we then kind of convert people to living more sustainable and take care of, you know, the nature around us so that we have something for future generations to come as well. And this is such a passion project of ours. And that's, so George had the idea and then we started talking about it in kind of 2019. And then same unfathomable reason, we didn't end up running a test camp last year, but we are fingers crossed, really hoping that we are going to run one. And we can't say anything yet because not all papers are signed, but we have an incredible collaboration brewing, which I would be really, really interesting to talk more about at a later stage. And I think we just want to be able to give, I think predominantly we've said children, but basically anyone who wants to come with us and do a camp in the city, because we're running it in London. And, you know, just doing a tent and sitting outside in the evening rather than sitting in front of the screen and, you know, sitting around a campfire talking. And we just believe that that can be such an eye-opening experience for a lot of people. And also learning, like, how do you cook your own food? And,
oh, yeah.
And, you know, like we did, Kelsey, with the bushcraft, just learning how to light a fire, which is surprisingly hard, I can tell you.
And I'm happy to hear that you're saying that it's, you know, open to anyone, because I was laughing when I was reading the statistics that you posted, and it was saying that studies show that children are better at identifying Pokemon characters than commonly known flowers and plants. And I had to laugh because I was like, I need an education in both of those things. But I don't even know if I myself, you know, can list off the commonly known flowers and plants. So I think that's really cool.
I saw this where they basically put five logos. It's a kind of on this in the same spirit. They put five logos next to the five most common leaves. And the five logos were, I can't remember all of them, but it was like the Nike swoosh. It was the Lacoste alligator. And I think it was, you know, the McDonald's arches. And two other brands, which I can't remember. And then next to it were leaves from like oak, ash, birch, and something else. And it was like, I could name the five logos quite instantly, and a lot of people could, but the five leaves were just beyond everyone's capacity. Yeah. And you know, and I find that it's, how can we expect people to care about nature when you don't even know it? You know, and then I think that's really something that we are, you know, it's so easy that you become a bit preachy when you talk about this, and it's not what we want to do, but it is really, you know, it's just hard when it's an abstract concept. You don't care about it as much as you do when it's something that you experience on, you know, as we've done. And I think that's what we really want to convey to people.
I think that is so amazing. And I think the timing of it is perfect, because I feel like a lot of people are A, looking to travel when it's safe to do so, and B, how do you become more sustainable? And I think a lot of companies are having their focus on that. I know the company I work for has a huge focus on sustainability, which I'm involved in. And just in my personal life, I've just really, you know, one of the things that I really wanted to do was that I remember reading this article, and it was like the seven questions to ask yourself if you're trying to find your life purpose. And one of the questions in that list was, you know, find a cause that you're passionate about and get involved. And I knew with adventure racing, like one of my goals was to run the seven continents again, starting in 2020. And that obviously all got put on hold.
Yeah.
But I thought, what can I do in the interim to still work towards that goal? But also, you know, if I'm going to do this running, like what can I do to raise awareness for something? And what is it that I'm passionate about? And I really realized that I am passionate about the environment. And I, to your point, it's like, I don't know a ton about it. And I thought this is a great way to learn and educate myself as well as educate others. So I think it's so, so fantastic that you are able to tie that into city camping.
I'm so excited
to see where that all goes.
Well, thank you, Louise, so much for joining me today. It's been such an amazing discussion, and it's been an inspiration to me personally, being able to learn from you. And I'm super excited to hear about your next adventures.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to soon seeing you in an adventure somewhere in the world.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Carry On Bags Only podcast. If you haven't already, hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Until next time, keep calm and carry on.